two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody. Welcome on in. It is your Thursday. Walking in, of course, to a weekend almost here of some exciting stuff, of course. If you're here local and you're excited about this Utah-USC matchup, you're not alone. What I love about this is how few people actually are giving Utah a chance, which is what Kyle Whittingham really wants. Now, I don't know if USC actually or if Utah actually believes that they are such an underdog in this thing. I think Vegas is a little bit closer on that line, and everybody's looking at that thing. But the college football news of the day isn't about the short term here this weekend. It's, of course, about the long term and the health of the college football playoff and an expansion. And the Rose Bowl finally got her way. And she wanted to have the last word. That's the thing. The Rose Bowl said, I want to actually be able to say the last thing. I want the final say on this thing. And they got it. They approved the whole deal down, at least for the next 2 years, for this thing to get started in 24 and 25. That's where we're going to start things off on the program right here. It is The Cut right here at the top of the show, as always.
There we go. The unquestioned. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made The Cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The Cut and our program, as always, brought to you by G2G Bars. G2G Bars, additive-free, preservative-free, a protein bar that tastes amazing. And it's a local company. Support these guys. Let's go. This is a big deal. We want you guys to be able to support them like they've supported the show. And, man, we're supporting them by buying those G2G bars. We're taking them out to every event we have. They are in the refrigerated section of Associated Foods, Costco, Holiday Oil, and Maverick, all because there's no preservatives, no additives. Like I said, they taste amazing. Give it a shot. G2GBar.com as well. All right. You might notice that my partner in crime, Scott Mitchell, not on the program here with us now, as he's now on the road. He took the heat of many other folks. I think a lot of the people that are leaving our station are doing they didn't just take Kevin Eubanks' word for it with Hans and Scotty today, which was get out of Dodge, bro. But last night when you started to see all this go down, you started to see our sports department have to go, I think our plans are changing just a little bit. Might have to add another night to this one. And that's what you're going to get is a bunch of people making that exodus down tonight. And that's the recommendation. Weather-wise, if you are planning on going tomorrow, it is not going to work out. So figure out how to leave today because that giant storm coming from the northwest. See, as I put my meteorologist hat on, you got this high-pressure system coming out of the northwest. It's going to bring in some snow showers all across that I-15 corridor there. And the nasty spots are always like Scipio down to Beaver. Scipio down to Cedar City, not good. If you've ever been in a snowstorm along that stretch, that will be you tomorrow, and it will not be you at the Pac-12 championship game tomorrow night. So recommended to leave as early as you can this evening. Drive freaking safe. But Scott's on that trip, along with some of our other TV colleagues as well. I want to start off by giving a massive shout out to the folks at the College Football Playoff Expansion Committee, all the people who had to deal with this thing, all the folks who were part of this thing, everybody who had anything to say to get this thing pushed forward. I still think that they could have probably figured some piecemealed version of this for next year just so we could get it going. Nobody wants to see this thing delayed any longer, but it's going to be happening in the 2024 season. And that's an exciting thing. 12 teams means you're going to have something that we haven't seen before. And I'm just going to say it right now. With the expansion of all this, with NIL money paving the way for us thinking totally differently about how college athletes should be compensated, treated, etc. With a 12-team field, you have the six highest-rated league champions, okay, including the Group of Five champion. Highest-rated Group of Five champion, right? Isn't that how they're going to? How do they do it?
It is the six highest rated champs, regardless of conference. There could be two. So what if the Pac-12 sucks? ACC?
Yeah. Okay.
It's just the top six rated.
Okay, but where does the G5 sneak into that though?
Well, they're in there because there's five.
But it's not going to be like the you're not going to see the Sun Belt champions not going to get in.
They could.
Okay. Well, maybe
any conference champion.
The whole idea is everybody's going to be able to have a shot now.
Correct.
12 team field, six highest rated league champions. Top four league champs getting those byes. That's, you know, basically what you see already with the way the semifinal is set up. But they would essentially be in a quarterfinal already with that bye, waiting for the winners of that first round. And so now you're seeing something that is amazing. TV will be going nuts. When these guys redo these deals, when these bowls actually mean something, now these top bowls have always meant something. But now these games walking into this thing are going to mean so much more. Everybody has a shot to win a national championship. Asterisk, because your team sucks. Okay? You might be listening. Now, the reality is that to be able to look at this and say right now what this would look like is Utah would be in. Now, the conference championship is still going on. So that this is bearing out, if it was just going off of the rankings right now in the college football playoff rankings, Utah would be playing in Tuscaloosa, week number one of the college football playoff. That is amazing. Kansas State and Tennessee, that doesn't sound like an exciting one, but that's Kansas State going to Rocky Top. When's the last time that happened? Doesn't happen very often. This is what you're aiming for already. Something different, something amazing. Clemson would be visiting Happy Valley up at Penn State. You don't see that very often either. That's an amazing bowl matchup already, and that's only the quarterfinals of a 12-team playoff. Ohio State and Tulane. The Green Wave are a perfect example of where insert your team who usually doesn't have a chance here kind of a name. That's what you're getting with this. Tulane is that Cinderella story, because the winner of that game between Ohio State and Tulane, which I know we all kind of have a smirk on our face, but you know what? This is an Ohio State team that hasn't been the greatest Ohio State team that we've seen in a while, right? I mean, they have one loss. They're so bad, right? But why not Tulane go into the horseshoe and throw an upset up there if Ohio State doesn't take them serious? The winner of that game would take on USC in the Rose Bowl the next week as part of that. And the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl and the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl, featuring your 1, 2, 3, and 4th-ranked teams that are in that bye, they'd be the quarterfinals, because then you'd play those four games to get yourselves to that semifinal and then get yourself into a national championship matchup between whoever that's going to be. That's how amazing this is. And so if you are Utah would be in this thing last year, I think we determined it would just have been just on the outside, right? Just on the outside looking in. But this year, In this week of rankings, they would be in. They'd be in this version. That's why this is amazing. And here's what I really think about all of this, though, because I want to take it to another level here, which is this. Playing all these games, playing all this setup, the way that it is, 12 teams, is a massive improvement. I would have never imagined as a kid that, one, we would have gotten to this point where we're actually playing for a legitimate title instead of just having some writers in a stuffy room name who their champion is, and then another group of writers across the country in a different room are giving their champion. Now we're getting down to, and then throw the computers out the window, right? If you're from the old BCS days, and then throw out just the idea of a bunch of old guys and gals getting together in one room at the Gaylord Hotel in Grapevine, Texas every week and going, these shall be the people who are going to participate, these four. Now it's 12. And so you know what has to happen now? The College Football Playoff Committee has to make it a priority to start sharing revenue from the TV with the freaking players who make it to the playoff. The coaches all get bonuses when they go to this. And if you think they're not getting worked in, Kyle Whittingham, we've talked a lot about those bonuses, right, that have been coming to him. And it's not to say he didn't deserve them. It's part of the landscape of what you get now if you have a big contract. So Tennessee, Kansas State, if they're in that first round of the College Football Playoff, if you're Michigan and you're Jim Harbaugh, you win and you win the Big 12 or the Big 10 championship this weekend, he probably has a bonus for beating Ohio State. Tell me that that's not in the work in the contract. I guarantee there's something like that. But all this needs to happen. All of these things need to get reworked. Yes, these coaches are going to get bonuses for going to, if you make the College Football Playoff, the top 12, hey, you're going to get $100,000 bonus. And if you're a player, you get 20 grand. And if you go to the next round, you get another 20 grand. And if you go to the next round, which is the semifinal of the new version of this 12-team playoff, you get 50. And if you go to the national championship game, you get another 50, and if you win the thing, you get 100. You know what that is? $280,000 for a guy who's on a roster who you put on TV for 4 weeks straight and reworked your new deal with. I think it's necessary. I think it's fantastic if they do it. They have to. They got to do it. Start sharing the money with the players. We're already down that road. And it's something amazing, too. When you say, if you're at Utah and you go, we're going to Alabama week one of the College Football Playoff in Tuscaloosa. And just by doing that, you get $20,000. We earned our way in. Everybody on this roster gets $20,000. You're welcome. But that, what an incentive that would be. Start paying these guys TV revenue for what is inevitably going to come to all these schools. More money because of the TV deal they're going to work. Their coaches are getting paid it. Pay the players, too. And that's not, listen, that's not even, that is me. I was a crazy person. If you would have gone back into the past with a little time machine, that would absolutely, I would have never thought this way. I've totally changed my tune on this. These players are the product, and they need to be treated like that. And you need to make sure that you pay these guys because we're consuming that product. Not just NIL money. Get them on that. Get those roster bonuses for guys in these teams. Let's jump out to the zone phone, which is actually the Zoom zone phone. Matt Biamonte joining us on the program. He's one of many people who are going to join us today. And Matt, of course, is one of our college football insiders for KSLSports.com, covers BYU extensively. Matt, you just heard my diatribe about how you got to pay these players now that we've expanded this thing. Everybody has to start thinking about it. It's more football. It's better football. It's what we've always dreamed of. Now do the right thing and pay these kids.
Yeah, I did hear that, and I'm all on board with that. If there's going to be billions of dollars at stake, there's no reason they can't get a piece of the pie. And I think what I'm really excited about with an expanded playoff, besides just more access for teams, I think the trickle down for that, Alex, is going to be, I think recruiting is going to even out a little bit, because for the past five or so years, yeah, there's been five power conferences that really have access to the College Football Playoff, but within that group of five power conferences, there were really only seven or eight teams that really had a realistic chance of winning a national championship. And I thought you saw a separation in recruiting with Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, because when they would go to kids' houses and say, we can play for national championships, there were only a few schools that could actually tell that.
Right.
And if you wanted to play at the highest level to showcase yourself to get to the league, you had to go to one of those schools. And so now that there's 12 teams that can get in, the race for those 12 is going to be 20 to 30 teams at this point in the season. Maybe not quite this point, but in early November, there's going to be 25 teams that still have a realistic chance to get in. And I think that's going to open up recruiting for a lot of these schools that can now actually sell to kids, you can play on the biggest stage with us. It doesn't have to be Georgia. It doesn't have to be Ohio State. You can come to Utah. You can come to, in Oregon, in a Washington, and realistically play on the biggest stage in college football. That's one part of it that really excites me.
You know, the thing that happens too with this, Matt, is we get excited about it because it's just better football games. If they can figure out a way to, even if these, if you're Penn State and you're hosting, if you're hosting a first week of these 12 games, right? If you're that, you know, it'd be 12 through 7, or I guess 12 through 6 would be the seeding numbers, and you're not getting that bye, so you're hosting one of these games. If you're 5, 6, 7, and 8, you're hosting one of these first week ones, then whatever that bowl sponsorship was going to be for that garbage bowl that we aren't going to care about, I'm going to take this even further. Make that bowl game at Happy Valley. That bowl game is now suddenly the fill-in-the-blank bowl that didn't make a difference now. And if you're that bowl sponsor, you love it because you have that 8-9 matchup that's what you're buying is an 8-9 matchup. It's going to be at a different location every year. You're not going to know what it is. But put that sponsorship on there. You need to start throwing out. You need to start having an intellectual conversation with the bowl handlers across the country and say, hey, listen, we're not going to have this just because it's a bowl game. Now, I'll tell you how else I'm not saying throw away all the bowl games altogether, Matt. What I'm saying now is you're going to pare down these numbers to mean something a lot more for these bowl games, which is what they used to be. They used to mean something, right? And so now let's get the bowl games meaning even more. And I would say here's how far I'm going to go on it too, because I'm obsessed with just give me all the football I can handle during the holiday season. I don't care, but make it worth something. Because the Poulain Weed Eater Bowl or the Chick-fil-A Bowl, not the good one, not the citrus bowl brought to you by Cheez-It, not that one, the actual just Cheez-It Bowl, throw that one out. I know they want to throw sponsorship dollars at it, but here's what we do now. We do it in college basketball, and if we're going to follow the model of, hey, add more teams, let's have a real tournament, let's have the next best champion, right? An NIT version. You could be the college football bowl champion. Right? And that's not your college football national championship. There's money still on this thing. It's basically the NIT of a college football world. Am I going too far?
Maybe a little bit.
We're playing the dumb games anyway, Matt. We're playing these stupid games anyway. So why don't we actually make it more something?
I don't hate moving some of the bowls to the home site for that first round, but I don't want all the bowls to go away because I still think there's some added benefit for some of these teams that go, I don't know, 8-4 and they miss out to go to a bowl. And I mean, yes, like think of BYU's bowl game in Treeport. That was lame. There wasn't anything cool.
Terrible.
They didn't get any cool swag. They didn't get paid. But like, you can't tell me that going to the Hawaii Bowl sucks. Like, that's cool to go to Hawaii for a week and to participate in some of those activities. And a lot of those kids may never go to Hawaii, you know, in their young period of life. So
make it part of its own little mini NIT then. They can have those bowls and they mean a little bit something more because then you go to the next round.
I'm not opposed to that. I'm just saying I don't want to completely eliminate bowls to the point where if you go 9-3 you get no reward.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not about no reward, but it is on a day where New Mexico was granted a waiver as a 5-6 team, that they could get into a bowl game for the first time in 61 years. How good does it feel to go to a bowl game for the first time in 61 years, but you're a 5-6 team? Like that, 5-6 teams, even 500 teams, should be gonzo. Those teams should not. There are teams who are going to be 5-7, and again, like I said, New Mexico State is likely going to be a 5-6 team. Those are the ones we're negotiating to get into bowls now. Those need to go away. Programs do not need to be rewarded for garbage.
There's too many bowl games.
Yes.
If you trimmed it down to 25, then there's some 6-6 teams not getting in, but you're still rewarding an 8-4 team that had a good year.
7-5 is like maybe fine. At least it's a winning season. At least it's like it's not a 500 year. It is a winning season. That is the very, very baseline. When we started letting 5-7 teams in on waivers, we got to some weird level there. Then we have to look inward and say, we've broken the system. It cannot go any further.
You're right.
Matt Biamonte, you can hear him on Cougar Sports Saturday. You can also hear him, or you can also see him at KSLSports.com. He and Mitch Harper do such a fantastic job on Cougar Sports Saturday, walking that thing through. Hey, we didn't even get to this part, though. Very quickly, though, Matt, BYU, now that they're going to the Big 12, does it actually make it where it's like, oh, shoot, The Big 12, you have to go to the Big 12, but now it might be a longer road for them, ironically, for them to get back to or to get into a college football playoff, considering how difficult the schedule is going to be for them going forward.
Yeah. It's going to be a tough road in the Big 12 because the schedule is going to get more difficult. But I think BYU, as we saw this year, they just have to find the right recipe in terms of recruiting and coaching, because this year was a year in which I thought BYU could have won 10 games. There was enough talent. And there was a lot of things that went wrong. There were some injuries. You could point to coaching. But they have got to iron those things out, and I think that's what's happening right now with Kalani Sitake, is identifying which of these coaches are going to help us get to a possible Big 12 championship, and where else can we upgrade? Where can we improve? Because everything at BYU has to be upgraded if you want to compete in the Big 12. And I know that BYU does. They don't want to just be a cellar dweller in a power conference. They want to win that thing. And if they're going to do that, though, they got to upgrade across the board. So that's recruiting. And look, they're given some advantages. NIL is going to help BYU. Selling the Big 12 to kids is going to help BYU, because now they're playing at a higher level. But along with all of those things, they have to upgrade facilities even. I think they need to upgrade analysts, support staff. All of those things need to be upgraded. And I think that's kind of what they're going through right now, is where can we upgrade? Defensive coordinator, you saw that Elisa Tuiaki, he wants to pursue a new challenge. And I think that was a mutually beneficial decision for both BYU football and for Coach Tuiaki. And that may continue with a few more guys. But they are, now that this 2022 season is over, Alex, they are in full-blown upgrade mode. And that's something they absolutely have to do.
What's the problem with the Big 12? What's their big tease issue here, where they're going, yeah, you might get the conference schedule here soon. Oh, we might get the conference. Today we heard we might get it, and it's probably not happening. Crickets from the Big 12. What's taking so long, and why did they even tell us in the first place we were going to get it, at some point during this fall? Just tell us we'll get it in 2023.
I think, honestly, the complication is Texas and Oklahoma, as they have always been in the Big 12, figuring out exactly who's going to play them at home, who's going to play them away. I imagine there's still a little bit of shuffling going on with Texas and Oklahoma and figuring out that piece, because it is a little awkward that new teams are coming in and old teams are staying for a couple years and then they're leaving. So I do think that complexity has probably been a bit harder than they thought, because I think a lot of us were like, well, you're going to play whoever we want. Well, you want Texas and Oklahoma to be there for those first couple of years. You don't want them to just get, buy out and leave. So yeah. I would imagine that's playing a role.
Yeah, but if you can make it a little bit annoying for them somehow over this next little bit, over these couple of years they're going to be in the conference, then you kind of want that too. Matt Biamonte, thanks for hanging out with me, Matt. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend of sports as we get into our Thursday and Friday here. Thanks for hanging out, man.
Anytime, Alex. Have a good one, man.
There you go. There's Matt Biamonte. My old buddy. It's 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah, USC. The Utes battle the Trojans for a chance to play in back-to-back Rose Bowls. Pac-12 championship game coverage on The Zone is presented by UCCU. Love where you back. Right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Thanks for being with us on your Thursday afternoon. If you have not left for the Pac-12 Championship game and you're driving, you got to go. You got to go. The weather is not going to cooperate tomorrow. Now, that's not a joke. That's not me making it up. That's not me having a laugh. It's already a problem, you know, as it is trying to drive down there when there's a conference championship or when there's a Rose Bowl down in L.A. Ask everybody who's trying to come back. Ask everybody who's trying to get their charging going on the way down there. The snow is going to hit tomorrow morning on I-15 between the worst part of this drive, between Scipio and Cedar City. You do not chance it. Do not try to leave tomorrow at 9 a.m. It's not going to work. Don't try to leave tomorrow at 6 and say, oh, it's going to work. It's not going to work. You're going to see all those semis stacked up along I-15 like they like to be this time of year with the bad snow. It's not convenient, but figure out a way to leave tonight. Joining us on the program right now, Antonio Morales writes for The Athletic. Fascinating piece, Antonio, that you wrote up about this about the future of college football and what now is becoming more and more clear as what a blueprint is, what Lincoln Riley's doing at USC. Bad season? Bring in everybody. New coach, new staff, new players. You can do it all in one swoop. If you're USC, it can happen, and they did it this year.
Yeah, I know. Obviously, you have to start with Caleb Williams. This isn't possible without him. And the quarterback just changes so much of the landscape for USC. And Utah fans saw him in the first game. And I feel like that's when he's really started taking off. And he just makes everyone around him better. And they've obviously added 17 more transfers, 18 more transfers other than him, but he's the one who kind of makes it all go. So that's what I try to mention in that story is, like, there's going to be a lot of teams. Like, I know Miami, Mario Cristobal will probably try to emulate what Lincoln Riley did this offseason. But unless you have a quarterback like Caleb Williams, yeah, it's going to be hard to do.
Well, you know, you mentioned the quarterback, and you mentioned, you know, getting guys in. And, yeah, you hit the – you know, if you win the lottery on getting a guy who's a Heisman hopeful immediately when he comes in, and we said the same thing about Caleb Williams, where you're like, yeah, he had a nice year last year at Oklahoma when he came in. And even in the games prior to running up to playing Utah, I think we looked at him and we went, yeah, he's talented, man. He throws, he runs, he's great. When we saw him in person, it was this weird thing where we were like, this in person is way more insane. Is that it's maybe more pronounced for him than I've ever seen in anybody.
It's funny because leading up to that Utah game, I was like, he's having a nice season, but he had kind of quiet games against Oregon State and Washington State. So I was like, how is he going to handle Utah, the road environment? And then he played one of his best games of the season, or his best game of the season at that point against Utah. And like I said earlier, ever since then, it's just, you know, something flipped or a light flicked on, and he's just been kind of unstoppable ever since then. And it's been kind of crazy to watch his progression throughout the course of the season. He's done a good job protecting the ball throughout the course of the year, but he's just added so much more responsibility with Travis Dye being out after the Utah game. Jordan Addison and Mario Williams missed a couple of games. He's playing with a defense that isn't very good. But, you know, despite all the weight on his shoulders, he's responded, you know, so well. And that's going to be another tall ask for him on Friday night.
Antonio Morales joining us from The Athletic. The piece that he wrote up most recently was about just how this rebuild went with USC and on the cusp of a college football playoff, if they can get a win over Utah this weekend. Now, today, the college football playoff, you know, landscape changes totally because the Rose Bowl is going to play ball, and they're going to, for the next couple of years, they're going to make this kind of pave the way for everything to work now for a 12-team playoff. And I think that it's interesting because on the one hand, you have this article about, look, you can throw – there is no rebuild anymore. If you're at a big school, you are expected to make it work now. And yet, at the same time, we're telling everybody on the other side, hey, 12-team playoff means, hey, even your team's available to maybe win the college football national championship, which is also not necessarily true. But, you know, when you have those two things going on at the same time, How awesome is a 12-team playoff? But at the same, with the way that things could work with the transfer portal, is it just going to still be the same old guys winning the national championship, even with this 12-team playoff?
I think it's going to be hard just because for new teams to win, just because you have to win three or four games in a row. And a lot of these schools don't have the depth to do that. Like if USC were to make the playoffs this year, I have a hard time seeing them win two games in a row against a Georgia and or a Michigan, mm-hmm. Just because they don't have the depth along the line of scrimmage to win two games in a row like that. It's hard. I feel like Ohio State, you know, for all the talent they have, and Utah went toe-to-toe with them last year, would they have been able to win another game a week after that physical game against Utah?
Right.
We saw them struggle with Michigan last week. Will they be able to beat Georgia 1 week and Alabama the next? It's tough right now. Unless I would want to see how it affects recruiting, and maybe if it spreads out the talent a little more, where kids are like, oh, I can go to the playoff, you know, at a school that's not Georgia or Alabama. If it spreads out in recruiting a little bit, then I could see maybe where it shifts. But as it stands right now, I still think we'll see some of the top schools still kind of rule the roost.
Antonio Morales from the Athletic joining us. Now let's get to this this championship game this weekend. What did USC learn about themselves in that first game? You said Caleb Williams like really started to turn it on in that game against Utah, and they come up short in that one. But he, you know, they came out popping, and they were up by a lot really early against this Utah team. What did they learn about themselves in that game? What did they learn about Utah in that game?
Yeah, I think, you know, all offseason, I feel like people had that game circled on their calendars. I know a lot of people expected USC to lose. And I think they felt they didn't win, but if they didn't, like, in a loss, I feel like they probably felt as good as they could have. Like, they led the game for about 58 minutes. The only time Utah led was when they took that two-point conversion at the end and scored. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, 50 seconds left. And considering the circumstances, it was an emotional night at Utah, honoring Aaron Lowe and Ty Jordan. Utah was just coming off the UCLA loss, so they were kind of fighting for their lives in the Pac-12 title game. There was a lot they were playing for, and USC went toe-to-toe and led for about 58 minutes of that game. So I came away. I didn't really believe in the USC college football playoff contender thing until a couple weeks ago. But I think that night impressed me in terms of what they could do, because I don't know if any other program in the Pac-12, any other team would have won at Utah that night, and they almost did. So I think I learned a lot in just, you know, how they're able to handle the situations. You know, I think it made them more battle-tested for games like UCLA and Notre Dame down the road.
Does it end up being a different result this weekend then in Vegas? I know it's not the home crowd, but certainly both teams are going to be sending a loud contingency, and Utah always travels well down there to Vegas. So what's going to be the difference? So what's really going to be the thing that makes it to where USC can either get the W or Utah repeats against USC?
Well, I think it's going to have to come down to Cam Rising, and can he play like that again? Part of me is like, he had, you know, probably the game of his life against USC the last time around, and can he do that again? And can he match Caleb Williams, you know, score for score? And part of me is thinking, no, he can't. But then a part of me is saying, you know, USC's pass defense hasn't been good, and it's made Drew Pine at Notre Dame and Jack Plummer look like all-stars. And Cam Rising is definitely better than those guys. I think it's going to come down to whether USC can disrupt him more than they did the first game. I know USC fans are clinging to the roughing the passer calls, but you know, those are two plays out of the however many times Cam Rising dropped back. It didn't really affect him much. I think
right. If
this game is going to change, it's going to have to be 2-2 below two. He had a quiet game the first time around. I think he's going to have to be more disruptive, and they're going to have to affect Cam Rising a bit more.
Antonio, we appreciate it. Antonio Morales covers USC for The Athletic. Thanks for hanging out with us, and have fun at the game this weekend.
All right, thanks.
All right, appreciate it. I'll take the break here. Davis Vision extending its Black Friday sale. There are a couple slots available if you want to get LASIK and you want to get their best offer of the year from Davis Vision. $1,400 off of LASIK right now in December. It's a great time to get those savings done. Spend that FSA money. Let's get it going. Davis Vision offers flexible, no-interest financing as well on top of it. Check them out, DavisVisionMD.com. That's DavisVisionMD.com. Save as much money as they do all year long at Davis Vision for that Black Friday LASIK sale. We'll come back. We've got more to go around the corner. Our What Are the Odds are upon us. We've got some stuff to throw out there, and we want you to participate. So there you go. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Stay with us.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby!
You'll know exactly. More or less. What's going to happen? This is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's a Thursday edition of Unrivaled. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Curie here. Scott Mitchell's on the drive down to Vegas right now, of course, for the coverage of the Utes and Trojans tomorrow down at the Allegiant Stadium. We call it the Allegiant Stadium. Is it like the is it like the Costco?
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Okay. Well, so he's down there. He's heading down. He did the right thing. You got to leave early. Everybody says you got to leave early. I know a couple of my friends that were leaving. They left at like 11 today because they were like not messing around with it. So all that cold front apparently is supposed to roll in, and like I watched all the models, I watched all the projected forecasting model. It's not good tomorrow morning across I-15 down where you're going to be driving through. And if you've never gone through that stretch with bad weather, if you've just coasted through there on nice weather on the way down to St. George before, you have no idea how terrible it is in the snow. It is freaking awful. And all those semis that you just kind of fly by, they're all stacked up going up these little hills, and they're not able to get up there, or they're putting chains on the side. You don't want all that noise. Head out early, man. Come on. Let's go. Be safe. that's the last thing you want. Have this massive thing going on, and somebody gets hurt. I mean, people are already dumb in the snow, and just you got to be careful. So just leave early. Do yourself a favor. And it's a perfect excuse. Honey, I got to go early. I'm so sorry. Hey, boss. I don't know if you saw the weather. Send him that clip of Kevin Eubanks saying, your employees need to leave early. You get Kevin to do some recording, like some special one.
It's the fake permission slip, right? Yes. I got to miss work because, fill in the blank.
The doctor's note. Mm-hmm. It's a meteorologist note. It's just a picture of Kevin with his white jacket on. He goes, get out of town, bro. It's What Are the Odds right now. Time for a market update right now, courtesy of the folks at TryDayTrading.com. TryDayTrading.com, of course, where you too can test your ability to be able to be a day trader. You can do it yourself. Try day trading. That's what it is. TryDayTrading.com. The market update, let me just tell you. Dow down 194 points today. S&P 500 down as well, less than 0.5%. And the NASDAQ was up 0.1 of a point as well. So there you go. All right. First up here on What Are the Odds? And here's how it goes. Jeremy, you going to play with me?
Of course.
Okay.
It's kind of hard a one-person game.
But why would you put a soccer one in?
You enjoy the soccer.
I put up with the soccer. All right?
It's USA. Come on.
It is. And look, the USA is moving on to the next round. You know who's not? Germany. Sorry, folks.
Or Mexico.
Mexico. See, Belgium. We're better than all the – Belgium. We're better than all these countries. All right? There you go. The forward for USA Soccer, Christian Pulisic, was hit in a rather sensitive area during that game against who were they playing? Iran.
Is that the right way to say it?
He scored on the goal. That's the right way to say it. He scored on that goal where he got hit pretty hard. He suffered, as Team USA delicately put it, a bruised pelvic bone. So what are the odds that he actually plays in this game?
It's high.
He says he's going to try everything he can, but you know that's the kind of garbage that we hear from Jaren Hall sometimes. Oh, man, I want to be out there. I'm going to do everything I can to be out there. And you're like, oh, boy, he's not playing. But now Jaren told us yesterday he's playing in the bowl game. Done.
We'll see.
Okay, let's see with Christian Pulisic. What do you think?
I'm going to go, hi, he's going to play. Doesn't say start because I put this in there. Michael Irvin, 88%.
Oh, okay.
He's going to play.
I'm going to go with a...
Got a soccer number for us?
Yeah, I'll go his soccer number. He's 10. I just saw it.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of high numbers in soccer. I don't think they do the high numbers. Not like we do. You got to go to like the MLS. All right. What are the odds that the SEC gets five teams or more in the very first college football playoff of 12 teams coming up in a couple of years? Now, right now, as it stands with the rankings, if LSU wouldn't have lost last week, there would have been four in this weekend.
True.
And it would not have been insane on a normal year to have four or five that are right there. Greg Sankey, their commissioner, actually joked about getting seven in. And when I say joke, I mean he probably is like hoping that that's the standard. Yeah. Seven out of the 12. That's what everybody fears, is that you go, we have this 12-team playoff. Five of them are from the SEC. Three of them are from the Big Ten. You know? And then like we throw all these other teams in there who I guess we can crown champions and then move them in there. So what are the odds that in the very first 2024 college football 12-team playoff, the SEC has five teams or more?
I'll go old school. Robert Parrish, double zero.
Oh.
Come on. It's not happening.
Good. Hey, I'm glad you're confident about it, because I think the rest of college football world is pretty freaking scared that it's just going to turn into a different version of the good old boys club.
You're telling me Arkansas 8-4 is getting in?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. No. What's going to be is a 9-3 Texas team sneaks in at 12.
Oh boy.
That's what's going to happen. No, are they in? Yeah, because that'll be the first year they're doing it, right?
Yeah,
25, I guess, is when they go in.
No, they'd have 1 year because it's 2024 season.
It's the start. So next year and 24. No, Texas will still be in the Big 10, or in the Big 12, rather.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, boy. You do not want that. The Big 12 sending their representative, like an Oklahoma-Texas representation in the college football like first 12 team.
Like the Pac-12 right now. You want USC, right? Is that what they're wanting to do?
Do you?
No.
No, of course not. But it's a weird thing, too, because you also get a little bit of a financial bump if they go to the college football playoff.
Pick your poison, I guess, right?
Yeah, the poison is you hope the Trojans get poisoned.
It's like, go Utes, come on.
Like, this is when you don't choose sides, but when you hate it one side a lot, then there you go. Then the side is chosen for you. Okay. What are the odds that the top four stay the same over the weekend? The top four college football playoff teams right now stay the same over the weekend. Or some version of that, they are all there. If TCU loses, they might have a shot of staying in there because they'd only have one loss.
If you go that route, it's pretty high. Staying the same number, it's low. Because
Michigan could lose and still stay in there.
They're not going to lose.
Georgia could lose. They could stay in there.
They're not going to lose.
TCU could lose to Kansas State. That's the one wild card.
Utah. You're not giving Utes? Come on.
Oh, that's the thing is, I think, no, I'm saying...
USC's out if Utah wins. Come on.
100%. But I'm just saying, like, that's already a given that one's shaky. TCU's also kind of shaky. No one believes TCU still. We'll see, though. What are the? I'm going to go with that it's all the same. There's too much. There's too much going on. There's too many things going. I'm going to give it a Brett Favre 4% chance.
That low?
Brett Favre 1.1 million percent chance. That's the money he stole from Mississippi.
I'm a little more optimistic that the top four will be in there, even though.
Okay.
Oh, man. Can I go with the Hakeem Olajuwon 34? I just want to bring him out. That's
sure,
all
I know. You just wanted to say.
Can I say Clyde Drexler 22?
Hakeem the Dream. You wanted to say Clyde the Glide.
To make people mad, Vernon Maxwell 11.
Wow. Bringing out all the stupid Rockets that we've hated. I don't know. I don't think we've hated Hakeem Olajuwon.
Who hates the Dream? Come on.
No, he's too good.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. It is Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell on the road to the Pac-12 championship game as we speak. Yeah, this is going to be a big one. Same place, same weekend. Very different opponent from that Oregon Ducks team last year that the Utes defeated to be able to get their first Pac-12 championship in their history and to move on to their very first Rose Bowl in their history as well. So many things to dice up and talk about because you have that short-term look on things, but also the college football 12-team playoff means, and it affects all the teams now that were never really a part of the conversation. You can at least trick yourself if you look at it. It's like squinting at something. If you squint at the 12-team playoff hard enough, you could picture your team in there at some point in the future. There is a path, for even small teams to get into that college football playoff. And, you know, by the numbers, if you do it, you could potentially get that national championship as well. Joining us right now on the program, Matt Zemek, TrojanWire.com, joins the program periodically. Matt, thanks for being on with us again. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, man, what a big weekend. You got the Trojans and the Utes firing off. They've, I'll tell you, here locally, this is the one where after this game got over, that 43-42 marathon, the two-point conversion, just all sorts of, you know, they played so many. The highlights are all in slow motion, you know, after a weekend like that. You know, you throw all those in there, throw some music behind it, you get more season ticket holders getting involved. And that was such a fun game. Lincoln Riley called it an elite college football game this week. And after that game happened, we went, wouldn't that be fun if there was a rematch in the Pac-12 championship game? And lo and behold, here we are. Do the USC Trojans feel the same way?
Yes. Like USC wants to settle a score. And if USC wins, USC can say that it beat every team on its schedule, you know, 1-1 against Utah. But nevertheless, every team on its schedule it beat. So, and of course, there's a Pac-12 championship. And Lincoln Riley, you know, he won 4 straight Big 12 titles at Oklahoma from 2017 through 2020 before that streak was snapped last year. So he wants to get back and win another conference championship again. So, you know, like the stakes are obvious. And I think your listeners in Salt Lake City might be interested in, you know, what's the USC perspective? What's the USC mood? I'm not going to claim to say what the mood is. I'm just going to speak for myself that, like, this is a very dangerous game for USC. And some people might think, oh, USC is just full of itself, puffing out its chest. You know, this USC team has shown some humility this season, not in the sense of, you know, Caleb Williams Heisman pose, like that's, you know, that's kind of flaunting it a little bit, but in terms of not thinking like the job is done or that it can kind of coast on its talent, like that was a mature performance against Notre Dame. It was a physical performance. Notre Dame, you know, did not manhandle the Trojans in the trenches. And, you know, so with playoff pressure, with Pac-12 championship game pressure the week before against UCLA, this team could have fallen apart. You know, it fell behind 14-0 against UCLA. It didn't. Like, these guys are together. This is a cohesive team. It speaks to what Lincoln Riley has done, not as a tactician, but in terms of creating a new culture in 1 year after Clay Helton. So, like, USC's kept its eyes focused on each game and each goal. It really hasn't looked ahead to future opponents. It's really been able to stay on task. And I think the real challenge in this game from a USC perspective is USC just played UCLA and Notre Dame, you know, two of the biggest games on the USC schedule any year,
right?
Not just this year. Like, mm-hmm. It's always essentially important to beat the Bruins, beat the Fighting Irish. And of course, you know, in the odd numbered years, USC goes to South Bend in the middle of October, but in the even numbered years, such as this one, you have the Notre Dame game on Thanksgiving weekend in Los Angeles. So the UCLA Notre Dame games were back to back. USC now has a short week after those two games. And so if mentally more than physically, I think USC might run out of gas, might come out with a flat performance. Obviously Utah's hoping for that. But the other thing is that Utah just played Colorado. So that was a game where Utah didn't have to be, you know, at its very, very best. It was a game that the Utes could kind of glide through and they could, you know, gradually focus on preparing for the Pac-12 title game if they got the chance. And because Oregon State made that comeback, Utah did get the chance. So, you know, USC played Colorado the week before its UCLA game. That game against Colorado was November 11th. And so USC was able to, you know, just get through that game, rest some players, get a little bit healthier. And sure enough, you know, playing Colorado before UCLA and Notre Dame really helped USC as kind of an on-ramp, you know, didn't have to expend too many resources in that game against Colorado. So now Utah derives the Colorado benefit, and USC is coming off two of its most, you know, emotionally involving games of the year. A lot of people in Los Angeles and people among the USC fan base are really surprised that Vegas has this as just a USC as just a 2.5 point favorite. That's why. It's because USC is coming off those two brutal games on a short week, with the game being on Friday, while Utah just played Colorado. It's a situation where Utah might actually have a lot more in the tank than USC does.
Looking ahead to the 2024 season, now that the Rose Bowl is signed on and everybody is good with a 12-team playoff, and how much does that change the landscape of college football overall? USC is always going to be USC. Doesn't matter what conference they're in. If they go to a place, if they go to whatever conference, they have the potential to be really, really good. And if you're good, you're going to be in that 12-team playoff. But what does it do? Does it improve college football, or is it just more money on for the TV guys?
Well, you know, so this is a complicated question, obviously a necessary one. You know, in some ways, the biggest gripe that a lot of traditionalists are going to raise, and it's a fair point, is that Alabama can go 10-2, you know, like what we're seeing this year. Alabama can lose twice and still get in the playoff and win. Fair point. However, you have so many other counterbalances to that. First off, the little guy is going to get a seat at the table. You know, a group of five team is going to be in this 12-team playoff pretty much every year. That's good. Like, the little guy gets his shot. We remember Boise State being excluded in the Chris Peterson era,
right,
when those teams were really great. You had some TCU teams that didn't get to play for the national title. You know, the 2010 team that was shut out when Oregon played Auburn.
Yep.
Other TCU teams went unbeaten, didn't get their chance. And so that kind of team will get its shot. And that's good. I think the larger point to make is that college football messed up over the past few decades. Like, the BCS was a very exclusive system, and the BCS had the effect of, you know, ruining the Rose Bowl's tradition, at least in the years when the BCS national title game was at Rose Bowl. So it became under the BCS, we stepped over the line. We stepped into a different world in which making the Rose Bowl, you know, if it wasn't the national title game, became a disappointment.
Sure.
That's a lot like the Ohio State team that played Utah last year. You know, Utah wanted to be in the Rose Bowl. It was a huge moment for the school. But Ohio State, oh, we wanted to be in the playoff.
Sure.
And so that's why, you know, Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, other Buckeyes, didn't play in that game. So, you know, the BCS really wrecked college football's traditions. And the solution that was there for college football all along, but which the sport did not choose, it should have, but it didn't, was to do a plus one after the bowl games. You know, you just do that one thing, you could have left the traditional bowl structure intact. Then you have a plus one after the bowls to decide the national champion in kind of a playoff, in a playoff-like format, but not a bracketed tournament. You know, like, when we consider some of college football's more controversial national championships, let's pick an example such as 1983. All right, in 1983, you had number one Nebraska going up against number five Miami. You had number four Illinois in the Rose Bowl against UCLA. You had number three Auburn against number eight Michigan in the Sugar, and you had number two Texas against number seven Georgia in the Cotton Bowl. So you had seven or eight teams that went into that season's New Year's Day bowls, or those games were on January 2nd in 1984. You had seven or eight teams that all went into the New Year's bowls thinking, hey, if the dominoes fall right, we could win the national championship.
Right.
And so the old New Year's bowl system from the 1980s, you actually had more fan bases, more teams in the national title hunt heading into the New Year's games. So that way, making the Cotton Bowl instead of the Orange Bowl was not a disappointment, because you had your chance, and we all played the games on New Year's Day. And, you know, if the results go right, you could still win. But with the playoff, it reduces it to four teams, two games. And if you're outside those two games, your season's a disappointment, at least if you're an elite blue blood type school.
Sure.
So the solution was always just to have a plus one after the bowl. So, like, you can think of Miami, Washington, 1991, Colorado, Georgia Tech, 1990, and on and on and on. The other two team examples from the past, you just play a game after the bowls and you solve the problem. So for people who think that this is going to erode college football, I'm going to counter and say, you know what? The past 20 years haven't been that good. The past 20 years have not given us very satisfying results. Like, was anyone satisfied by Oklahoma State not getting to play LSU in the 2011 season? And Alabama and LSU playing a rematch, that's how it used to be. You know, that's how it was under the BCS. Like, the BCS was not some golden era for college football. I would argue exactly the opposite. So for all the flaws of this 12-team plan, there are definitely flaws, like Alabama losing twice and still comfortably getting in. Like, that's the big flaw. For all the flaws of this plan, you get the little guy in, and you also just get one very simple thing: more games, less talk, more games to decide the issue. And that's really the thing that fans have been wanting all along. So if you weigh all the pros and cons, I'm going to say it's a net plus for college football. But I'll also say we could have done this so much better 30 years ago.
Well, and you think, too, even before that and inside those 30 years, then after all of it was said and done, you had writers who would get together and kind of determine it, right? You get it together and go, well, we have our champion. And that's why you have that 91 split. And that's why you have the 1990 split. Yeah. It just, you have like, well, we have our champion over here. You guys have your champion over there. And we just could never figure it out. And we like, we're okay with that system. We didn't like it, but we went, well, how are you going to fix it? Because the whole thing was, is we would never mess with bowl games the way they were. Except for the way we messed with them was we added a kajillion of them. So then they mean less. The ones that aren't in those top ones, they don't mean anything. And so you still have a chance to be able to make some of these a little bit more meaningful, too. And I think that it's a great point, too, because it's not just a plus one, it's a plus eight. And you get teams in there that you would have never seen. I mean, if it were today, we all saw it, it'd be like, look, Tulane would be going to the Horseshoe to play number five Ohio State in that first round. That is a pretty fun game because you go – those guys never get a shot, and they get a shot. And it is Ohio State, and it is at the Horseshoe. But you know what? This is their chance, and it's an amazing thing. That's what we all wanted all the way along. So Matt Zemek, Trojan Wire, TrojansWire.com is the website. You can find his byline there. He runs that thing, and he knows a lot about this USC Trojans team. Is there anything that Utah did in that first game that USC looks at and goes, that's not going to happen anymore? Is it just shutting down Dalton Kincaid, or what is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Dalton Kincaid when he goes. Not just the 16 catches for 234 yards, but he was targeted 16 times and he caught all 16 passes. And so Andy Ludwig took Alex Grinch to school. And so if Alex Grinch can't make some fundamental adjustments on that side of the ball, well, it's going to be a long, cold, harsh off season for Alex Grinch.
That's, you know, we were just playing a couple pieces of sound from Alex Grinch, and yeah, you can tell in his voice there, because Lincoln Riley said this week, this isn't a revenge game, and you're like, well, you have to say that, but the rest of your staff doesn't think that, and the players don't think that. They absolutely look like this, like they're trying to get back at Utah.
They do, and certainly on the defensive side of the ball, they should. And, you know, one of the key plot points I'm looking at in this game is that Eric Gentry got injured late in that Utah game. You know, he was crying when he got carted off. Very emotional moment for him. He played against Notre Dame. Like, it was his first meaningful action, you know, more than just a handful of snaps. He played, like, two or three plays against UCLA. Wasn't physically fit just yet. But another week, he was able to go against Notre Dame, make several tackles. So he kind of got the juices flowing. He got the blood pumping again, got used to some game situations again after basically a month and a half of inactivity. So you know that he, in particular, wants to be on the field when there's a big defensive play. He was not on the field for Utah's game-deciding touchdown and two-point conversion on October 15th. So you know that this means a lot to Eric Gentry. It's going to be interesting to see how he performs and how the Utes can counter him.
How healthy is USC going into this one, Matt? Because, you know, I think a lot of folks look at the way that that Utah is kind of set up, and they know that they've got a couple injuries on there, and or guys that just aren't on the team anymore, like Tavion Thomas. And so they're people wonder even about the health level of Cam Rising. But where's USC when it comes to the health level of things?
Yeah, there are some significant questions. Now, you know, Jordan Addison and Mario Williams, they should be fine. Like, you know, at the skill positions, USC's pretty set. But Andrew Voorhees, their best offensive lineman, likely to be a first-round NFL draft pick, he left the Notre Dame game in the second half. And so while I would expect him to play, it's uncertain how effective he's going to be. That could be a real counterbalance. Because as you well know, Utah has – some significant injuries on its defensive front, is not going to have its very best pass rushers on the field healthy for this game. So if Voorhees is out for USC, well, that evens up the matchup up front. and it would give Utah a much better chance of doing the thing it really has to do to win this game, and that is to bother the heck out of Caleb Williams. So Andrew Voorhees, that's a name along the USC offensive line. How effective will he be? How many snaps does he play? That's going to be a particular injury concern for USC and something that Utah and its staff are going to closely monitor.
Does this one end differently then than it did in the first game, per your estimation?
You know, probably, but I do. I am very much concerned about USC having the tough schedule and Utah being able to downshift through the Colorado week. I think Utah might actually be able to match USC's energy in this game, and I think that there's a definite chance the Trojans could fall flat. One of the big mysteries for this game is that, you know, a year ago, Utah dominated Allegiant Stadium. It was like an 80-20 split against Oregon in terms of the crowd. I have no idea what the crowd makeup is going to be for this game. Is it still going to be a building that's owned by Utah, or does USC bring, you know, a significant amount of fans such that it's pretty much a 50-50 split? So I don't know about that. But, like, the energy each fan base brings to the building, like, that is an intangible. And, you know, USC got off to the big start against Utah, but it was in Salt Lake City. So the Utes were able to come back in Rice-Eccles Stadium, where they're just so incredibly tough to beat. Is this going to be Rice-Eccles South again 1 year later after the Oregon game last year in Las Vegas? Or is this going to be a true neutral site game? I don't know, but that is a definite plot point on my checklist at Trojans Wire.
TrojansWire.com. You heard him, Matt Zemek. Love having you on the program, Matt. And we'll talk to you again and have fun this weekend.
Really appreciate you having me on.
All right. There you go. Love talking to Matt. He gets fired up. Love it. So many things going on with this college football playoff thing, too, because I think that you have to manage your expectations on how this thing's going to go. It's just going to be, and it might even be every year, that it's just going to be the same old retreads. And you'll just have to be satisfied by the fact that there's going to be two or three every year that you go, oh, hey, you never see those guys there. Oh, hey, you never see this team there. But you're definitely going to see that power. The question is the power shift going to remain? I mean, is it going to stay so heavily Southern and, you know, Southeast Conference, Big Ten? Is that the power dynamic for the rest of college football history? And will the transfer portal kind of even out a little bit and not be such a wild place where every team just tries to build a national championship 1 year upon another one like USC did this last year? Because if the transfer portal keeps going up at the rate that it is, the numbers that are in there, it's not sustainable. And you can't convince any kid for any reason to stay at a program. It's like, it's not just these days if they're not starting, it's if they're not playing well at that school. Then they go, well, you know what the problem was? This guy. This offensive coordinator. Yeah, that's the problem. I'm moving on. I'm getting to the transfer portal. And because that free agency tool that they're using can actually become, you know, it's abused. These guys will jump into the transfer portal like crazy, and it's not necessarily a greener pasture. And it's definitely not for college football. It's definitely not going to be a greener pasture, because if you have everybody switching all the teams all the time, and as soon as they don't play, they're gone, or as soon as they're not playing well or below what they thought they were going to be playing, they blame it on their coach and then they move on. That's a tough deal. Will the college football playoff make it to where you go, hey, look, we have been, if you're, for example, let's say Kansas State, like they're in right now, if it were today, they'd be the number 10 seed in the college football playoff of a 12-team playoff, okay? And if you could roll into a kid's house who's, you know, lives in the state of Oklahoma, and he's a darn good linebacker, and you go, listen, we've been to three out of the last five college football 12-team playoffs, and we won one of those games, whatever it might be. Instead of just having to be like, you won't be playing on a big stage here because Kansas State doesn't play on big stages. But if you are a number 10 team versus a number 12 team, and you have a shot of being in that college football playoff, and as soon as that first team that's a lower seed, that 10, 11, 12 type seed, as soon as they win a game on the road against a big name program, we're going to be in love with the system. The problem is, what if it doesn't happen for a long time? I mean, it happens. Upsets happen, and they do happen. But Matt said it right. if Alabama is 10-2, and they're not just in the college football playoff, 12th team playoff right now, if it were to start today, they're like easily in. They're the number 6 seed according to this, the way it's set up, because they're the 6th team in the college football playoff rankings. But they've lost twice. And the reality is the matchup they would have is they would likely play in the first round. Oh, who was it? Somebody definitely easy. I can't remember what the actual team was on the map. But the second round after they play Utah. So on this map, according to this one, they play Utah in Tuscaloosa. Okay? That's a tough game for the Utes. But so let's say Alabama, who does Nick Saban things and just wins in the postseason, they win that first game against Utah. They go and play TCU in the second game to get to the semifinal. Does anybody think that TCU would actually beat Alabama? Alabama would be favored in that game by more than a touchdown. Guaranteed. Am I wrong? There's no freaking way. That is exactly what happened.
At least 5.
look at degenerate gambler Jeremy over here. I'll give you 5 and a hook. You want to take that? Come on. Entertainment purposes only, Jeremy. Let's take a break. I just am like, so it is. That's the part that stinks. But on the current setup, Clemson would be playing at Penn State. That's a cool game, man. That doesn't happen a lot. I don't even like Clemson, and I don't like Penn State either. But Tulane would be playing Ohio State. Utah would be playing Alabama in Alabama. Holy cow. That would be so much fun. Kansas State and Tennessee are in this thing, and they're never in this thing. So I'm looking forward to it, whatever it looks like. Those first couple of years, I hope that they blow the roof off of this thing and go, and you have a Tulane, and you have another type of a Tulane team, and you have a couple of other teams that you don't see. And God bless that first team who's going to win that first upset in that 12-team playoff. It's going to make our world. All right. Let's take the break. Mark is here with us from Wasatch Medical
Group. Tom is on the KSL Sports Zone. Utah, USC. It's the Pac-12 championship game as the Utes look to punch their ticket to another Rose Bowl. Your home for the best coverage of Utah football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hut, hut, hut. This is Unrivaled, presented by G2G Bar on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, Alex Keery. Scott Mitchell on the road currently to the Pac-12 Championship game. Utah-USC, that's tomorrow. But don't leave tomorrow. They've given us all of the heads up that you can get. And so we're passing it along. All the weather people, including the most important ones in this building, Kevin Eubank included, say get out of Dodge right now if you're trying to make that trip down there. Do it early because tomorrow's not going to happen. Bad snowstorm coming through. And if you've never been in a snowstorm on I-15 through that corridor on your way down to St. George, it's not good. You don't want to do it. So stay safe out there and leave tonight, man. Another excuse to just be like, sorry, honey, I got to get down there. I got to get down to Vegas early. You know, weather. Joining us on the program right now, of course, hosts of Jake and Ben, every day 10 to noon right here on 97.5 The KSL Sports, and also pre-half and post with he and Tim Lacombe do such an amazing job every night. I get the chance to listen to pretty much the entire pregame every time before I get home on those nights at these 7 o'clock tip-offs. And so the Jazz get a win last night. They snapped the winning streak. Jake, thanks for coming on, man, because the solo shows are the worst, and getting my buddies on is always the best way to do it.
Oh, man, my pleasure. Anytime for you guys. Of course you know that. I do have a quick comment on our guy, Scott Mitchell.
Hmm.
You know what? He's Scott Mitchell. He's one of the best Utah quarterbacks in history. Why isn't he on? Huntsman One or something? Why?
Huntsman One
driving down there. driving down there.
Listen,
you know what I mean?
Hey,
like,
you know what happened?
You got Scott Mitchell.
I know.
The game going to the game.
I know.
You got to get him on whatever jet that's going
remember,
down there. What's
so
he driving
I've
for?
I've got some insider info on this. COVID hit. Right. So they used to take 2 charter jets to every game, the team. 2 jets, and it was like the team and then all of Witt's family, which accounted for basically half of one of the planes. And then The second plane was like the band, the cheerleaders, and the broadcast team, and a couple of other support staff. And then they, after COVID, they bagged the second plane. So it's like,
oh man,
yeah. So they've Scott's over here buying Comfort Plus so he can get his 6'6" frame into a you know into the exit row. So yeah, it's a bummer for him. But yeah, he's headed down, and he's also one of those guys too that goes, I like to drive, I like to think. So plus, as soon as this game happened, there were no flights. Like I don't know one person unless they have a private jet they were able to be like. It's tough to get flights. So a ton of people leaving today, and that's the encouragement that you can do it before that snow hits. And well, let's talk about that SC and Utah game. What changes in this one aside from the location? But how do you think this one changes? Does USC come in there with the revenge factor and go at the Utes, or is it does Utah just have USC's number right now? It seems to be that way over the last few years.
Well, I think the difference is for the Utes is their defense. How much better is their defense than when the two teams matched up the first time? And you, Caleb Williams are obviously super dynamic offensively, and they're going to put up points and yards. But, you know, how many stops can that defense get? Because I do think it's improved. And Utah's offense is a little banged up. I don't think you can count on those types of performances from Dalton Kincaid or Cam Rising, again, because they were just super. I got to make up the difference on the defense. And, if they can find a way to throw, if Cam can be, healthy enough, can plant, and find a way to sling it, that's where USC is vulnerable. But, that's where Oregon was vulnerable, and they couldn't do anything about it. So I think Utah's got to, put their adult pants on and play some stout defense against a really good USC offense, and that would be the difference. If Utah were to win, I would bet it's because that defense came up there.
Well, and giving up six touchdowns is not really the Kyle Whittingham and Morgan Scalley way on defense anyway. They did it those 2 weeks in a row between UCLA and that loss the week before USC, and even in the win, they gave up a ton of yards, and it was a slow start. That's the other thing that can't happen this weekend. You cannot have the ridiculous slow start, because I think it was 21-3 kind of right off the bat, or 21-7 kind of right off the bat. It was quick, and they had it was Utah playing from behind the entire rest of the game until that very last conversion. So you cannot have the slow start, and that benefited them last year. You think about how quickly they got off to a start against Oregon in the game here in Salt Lake, and then the exact same thing happened down there in Vegas. So there's no time to screw around, because this SC offense is legit. It's ridiculous, and hopefully that Utah defense has turned a corner. Speaking of turning a corner, is winning one game after a five-game skid, is that turning a corner, or what did we learn last night about this Jazz team?
Oh, yeah. I mean, get the parade going. that does not, honey. There you go. Uh-huh. That's my 5-year-old who is
I love it.
Doing her homework.
I love
and
it.
Learning to read. So she's doing great. Anyway, one game. No, yes, fire up the parades, Alex. Let's get the route going. Let's make this thing happen. I think the team needed to win, because it's hard to lose five in a row. I haven't changed my expectations much, even though the beginning of the season has been a roller coaster. They're going to have a tough time winning against good teams. But they're going to play hard, and they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. And they're really going to develop as a squad. But, especially without Mike Conley, it's going to be tough to certainly continue the pace they started the season at. And, it's bound to come down to earth a little bit, just because, the team has some certain vulnerabilities that are kind of built in and that are tough to overcome. But, there are nights like last night where, they defensive rebound as a team, all five guys in the paint, because they don't have a great rebounder. And Coach Hardy's talked about that. And you saw that big time against the Clippers and playing team defense. And, last night was a pretty interesting game, because they obviously were really wanted to win it. And the way Coach Hardy coached, he really wanted to win it as well.
When you talk about Will Hardy coaching, it's hard to like really see the effect sometimes because those guys are standing there and they kind of – you'll see them – they'll move their hand around and then when they take the time out, they go stand with their coaches in their little huddle for a minute and you go, man, what are they talking about right here? What are they going to do next? And what are the things that people are seeing that Will Hardy's doing that maybe they can go, that's why that he's doing a that's why he's doing a great job coaching? Last night, for example, they go, look, we have to – Jared Vanderbilt, we're going to need a double-double out of you because – Zubac is going to kill us on the boards, and so somebody's got to show up. But what are the things that he's doing that you're like, man, I love that he does that in his coaching?
Oh, I thought last night the post game was extremely interesting because of two kind of anecdotal things that he talked about, two interactions with players. And Alex, you played some sports back in your amateur day, and there were coaches that were really good communicators because they figured out how to communicate with the players that they were talking to and different ways to push their buttons and identify that sort of thing. Anyway, Coach Hardy mentioned two things. First, he talked about when and Hardy went to pull him, and Clarkson said, "Don't."
Oh boy.
I assure you. And Clarkson goes on to play 40 minutes and have a huge night. So that turned out to be a pretty good decision. And then he relayed Colin Sexton in the fourth quarter came to him and said, Coach, I need a breather. And Coach Hardy told him no.
How does that work?
He said, take advantage of this timeout. Go get some water, get some electrolytes in you, but we need you to go back out and play. And when Sexton was, you know, same story, but then said his reaction was, well, all right, I'm going to go out there and do it for you. Okay, if that's what you need, Coach.
That's awesome.
You know, in one circumstance, he trusted Jordan Clarkson to do what Jordan was assuring him he was going to do and be a smart veteran player, leader, knew what they needed to do to win the game. And in the other, he went against what the player wanted, said, no, I need you. I need you on the floor. Go get some water. It's really important that you're good right now. Go get him. And Sexton took it as a challenge. You know, he's like, all right, Coach, that's what you need. We'll go do it. And I think that's a good sign for effective communication, which I think we can all agree is pretty important in that position.
Well, and I think also, like, there could have been a different reaction. And I think we know guys across the league that would have a different reaction and coaches who would have a different reaction. And that's I think that's a sign of not just healthy interaction, but, like, probably where the team is, right, in terms of being able to take that kind of stuff and listen to their coach. Another set of back-to-backs. They've got tomorrow against the Pacers at home. Trailblazers Saturday at home, and then they're going to go next week as well. Their next two games are going to be at home there. So they get a stretch of four games here at home. They've already had two. And so Pacers tomorrow, that's going to be – you guys are going to be doing pregame while the Utes are kicking off too. That's going to be one of these fun both TVs up, watching all the things all at the same time. But what's this game look like tomorrow against the Pacers and maybe just the stretch of the next two games against them and the Blazers?
Well, the NBA scheduling, I don't know who in the Jazz organization, you know, what they did to tick off the NBA front office or, you know, scheduling office. But it's been crazy, the amount of road games they've played, the amount of games they've played total. And I'm not, making excuses for anybody. I'm just pointing out the facts that the Jazz have played more road games and more games than anybody in the league. And then they come home, Alex, for the next game. They're all against good teams. All the game. I mean, you know, Indiana's not the best team in the East, but they're in the playoff picture at the moment. They're well coached and they're talented, and that's not an easy win. Portland's been the story, you know, the start that they're off to, and we've already seen, you know, Portland. That's going to be a tough win. You know, it just the Clippers rested a bunch of guys, and maybe that game wasn't as difficult as it may have looked on paper, but, you know, that wasn't easy. The Bulls are better than people think, and a tough game regardless. So, I mean, the schedule has just been something brutal. So I would guess, honestly, it's going to be a hard weekend. It's going to be an uphill slog. Best chance, though, is to win tomorrow night and beat the Pacers for sure.
There you go. Jake Scott, Jake and Ben, every day, 10 to noon. And then tomorrow you can hear them. As everything's going to be kicking off with Utah, you're going to get the Ute pregame show at 5 o'clock. And then at 6 o'clock, Jake and Tim take over and give you some pregame with this Jazz-Pacers matchup tomorrow at Vivint. So, Jake, thanks for hanging out, man. And good luck with the parenting and good luck with the phonics because it's always fun.
Alex, man, it's always a pleasure. Anytime, you know, for sure. Love coming on.
All right. Appreciate it. There's Jake Scott. First job for 1280 The Zone, I sat next to Jake and answered phones while he taught me how to push the dump button when people cussed when they called in. Here are the words. We just watched all we did was watch the George Carlin skit on the things you can't say. It was a good tutorial. If you hear that and I'm out of the booth, you hear that, you hit this big old silver plunger. Boom. Yeah. Jake and I spending some early mornings there. Calling up Grand America. How's Greg Popovich there? Can you send me to Greg Popovich's room, please? Thank you. That's all you used to be able to do. Just call up the hotel and say, hey, we're from the radio station. We're doing a phone call with the visiting team coach. Let's do it. All right, we'll take the break here. We'll come back. Love having Jake on. When we return, got ourselves some stuff to chat about around the corner. We've got a little bit of the bowl gifts and what they're now turning into in 2022. You do not want to miss what you could be winning if you are going to the Cheez-It Bowl, okay? It's actually better than you might be thinking in your mind. It is not bad. I don't know if you'd want to necessarily win it as a grown adult, but college kids, man, they love it. Join Scotty and Hans, by the way, tomorrow for Football Friday, noon to 3. They're going to be at Mountainland Power Equipment at the new store there in Salt Lake, 2808 South Main Street. Scotty will be there at least, and probably Coach Mac and Alumma might make an appearance there too. Hans is going to be live from Las Vegas, so there you go. Got everything covered for you there. Mountainland Power Equipment at the new store for Football Friday, 2808 South Main Street. We'll take the break. We'll come back around the corner with more to go. Stay right here, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
You know what time it is?
Your home for the best football coverage in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone. Utah, USC. It's the Pac-12 championship game as the Utes look to punch their ticket to another Rose Bowl. Your home for the best coverage of Utah football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hut, hut, hut. This is Unrivaled, presented by G2G Bar on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. It's Unrivaled. Happy Thursday to you. Safe travels down to St. George and or Las Vegas, wherever your final destination is tonight, getting you ready for that Pac-12 championship game. If you have not left already, start thinking about it. That snowstorm's going to hit, and I'm just trying to pass it along. Big old weather advisory. If you've not gotten the alerts, you wake up. If you're going to that, if you have tickets to the Pac-12 championship game, you got to leave tonight. Let's go. So the NIL stuff has been interesting because when bowl games roll out every year, you get like a prize pack that these players are essentially given, or they're given an opportunity to spend like, PlayStation bucks or whatever it is inside their they basically let them walk in and they pick like four things. Wasn't there like a scandal of some guys stealing stuff out of one of those before, Jer?
Yeah, because he got the gift suite gift card.
Yes.
He wanted more. He's being a little.
Yeah. So you'll get that. But see, now with NIL stuff, these teams, these bowl game organizers and the bowl sponsors can actually offer a little bit more. And when I say thinking outside the box, or thinking inside the box if you're a Cheez-Its case, I told you before, I have a love affair with Cheez-Its. It's one of the things I've had to give up big time doing the soda thing because it was the singular thing that probably made me the most fat as a kid. It's not that Cheez-Its are so fattening. They're not a health food by any means. But I ate them by the truckload, which is literally what you're going to be able to get if you go to the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl or the Cheez-It. Now, they have this thing. Okay, the Cheez-It sponsors. This is from the folks at Kellogg. Okay? So it's a PR news release. So just take it with a commercially grain of salt. Cheez-It, the cheesiest sponsor of the college football bowl season, have partnered with the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl and the Cheez-It Bowl and are giving college football players and fans even more reasons to wake up, quote, feeling the cheesiest. This year, the brand is creating an exclusive Cheez-It feeling the cheesiest hotel rooms. Four hotel suites with official team hotels that look and feel right out of the Cheez-It box. And the pictures that they have associated with. Now, I know this is radio. I want you to imagine the most orange, the most red, the brightest yellow that you can muster. And they deck out these full freaking rooms. Cheez-It bedspread, Cheez-It sheets, Cheez-It pillow covers, Cheez-It headboard, Cheez-It posters on the wall, Cheez-It wallpaper, Cheez-It blinds. There's not a thing in the freaking room that's not Cheez-It. They have the TV outlined with a Cheez-It box. Cheez-It pillows on the couches. Cheez-It rugs on the floor. This is the worst anniversary in romantic getaway you could ever imagine.
Or
is it the best? Instead of the rose petals, just dribble some of those Cheez-Its all the way up to the bed. Listen, the amount of crumbs in that bed, get out of here with that. I've never done the anniversary in thing before. Have you done it? Have you done the anniversary thing in before?
Like
the themed room. I'd be honest right
yeah,
now.
One time.
You have?
Bed and breakfast.
What room did you get?
Oh, not.
The Cheez-It room?
I can't say. Can't divulge.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I honestly don't
You think
remember.
You know somebody?
I don't remember.
But. I do remember. Like they've sponsored. They've been sponsors on KSL News Radio mm-hmm. before. And I think at one point, we gave them out. And I think somebody called one time and they're like, yeah, the Adam and Eve room was a bit much. You know, like, or the Cupid room. That was a bit much.
What do you expect?
I know. It's a themed room situation. That's what you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. If you're into that, I would suggest Anniversary Inn, you could get Cheez-It on board for a very romantic night. And that's all. I'll leave it at that. So that's one of the things they're giving away. A full hotel suite decked out in Cheez-It. Everything. And that's what I said, too. I go, you got to be able to take all that home, right? I would make my teenage son's room. Like, I'd redo it. Best April Fool's prank ever. Make up the full room as a Cheez-It room. Amazing. And like I said, I love Cheez-Its. This is not over the top. This is exactly what you have to do if you are a marketer. You have to do stuff like this. The Cheez-It rug by itself, that's dope. I want that thing. That's a 5x7, beautifully woven Cheez-It rug. Get that thing going. If Costco doesn't start carrying those, I'm going to be upset.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
What's up, everybody? Welcome on in. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keurig, Scott Mitchell on the road to the Pac-12 championship game between Utah and, gosh, who is it? Are they playing this year? Are this at USC? Now, they're out of Southern California, aren't they, Jeremy? Does that sound right?
I believe so.
I'm just trying to poo-poo them as much as they poo-poo everybody else, right? If you are Oregon, or if you're Utah and you've already beaten Oregon, you go, okay, check that one off the list. Most important programs to knock off on our way to big-time games and big-time importance and big-time recognition across the college football landscape, which they already get because Utah has that respect. But if you want to do it and you want to really make an impact, you win these games. Not just in the regular season, but for that conference title and for the possibility to go to the Rose Bowl. And then that next step for Kyle Whittingham and his team, win that Rose Bowl, my heavens. We were talking about this the other day. This has got to eclipse last season as the best season ever for the Utes. Even if they win this Pac-12 championship game and just get to the Rose Bowl, would it eclipse that one? I don't know. It's tough to think because the way that they beat up on Oregon both games last year on their way in, that was so special. And that first Pac-12 title was really, really special. I think they have to up the ante a little bit and win the Rose Bowl just to make this one even more special. Joining us on the program right now, he is Patrick Kinahan, PK, of course, hosting every morning with DJ and PK. 6 to 10 right here on the KSL Sports Zone. PK, thanks for hanging out, man.
Yeah, I'm on the road myself, on the way to Las Vegas as we speak.
Well, see, that's the thing is, like, we're trying to convince people you got to get out of town. This is not a tomorrow morning thing. One of those brutal storms is rolling through in the morning. People aren't going to make it to the game.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I was watching the weather yesterday, and they basically said, if you're planning to go, you better leave today, which is Thursday. So about 1 o'clock, I did. I'm in St. George right now. I have free accommodations, always trying to save the company some money so they can pay your enormous salary and not have superfluous charges.
I'm over here. I'm sitting over here in Salt Lake. I seem to be the only one who's not down there. I mean, my heavens. Everybody else is going. I think that Lloyd, Hance, and I want to say Sam Farnsworth from TV, I think they're all sharing a twin bed at a hotel tonight, so that's good for them. They're also saving money for the company.
That'd be rough, but yeah. So I will head. I'll do the show from here tomorrow, and then head over after the show and get there in plenty of time, I would anticipate, for the big game.
How's this one stack up compared to last year's Pac-12 championship game in terms of anticipation, and then also how this compares to that first game against USC that they played already this year that they won in Salt Lake?
I think the first time you go to the Rose Bowl is always going to be special, and any time you go to the Rose Bowl for that matter, particularly now since the Rose Bowl will be changing. We're running out of time to have it what has been for so many years. It's been interrupted a few times with the BCS and stuff. So that'll always be special, and there was no stress in that game. It was over halfway through the first quarter, and there was that. I was there. And there was not that many Oregon fans. It was a Utah fest. I came back the next day and played golf in St. George. And me and 500 of my closest Ute friends, I think, were on the course too, because everyone was doing the same. I just barely got in. Stopped at a rest stop and saw a bunch of Ute fans there on the way. So they'll have a good crowd, and it'll be awesome because, you know, SC is the benchmark in the conference. You talk about how they dismiss people. I worked for 10 years in a suburban newspaper in the Los Angeles area. And each year, each succeeding year, my hatred for USC grew. because we had a lot of SC guys in the sports department that I worked for, plus their fans. Can be really obnoxious. I can remember one year, the Devils, I'm an ASU guy, everybody knows that, and the last time he went to the Rose Bowl was 96, and they played ASU in Tempe, and it went into overtime, and Brad Auten, who I think it started at Weber State, and then was the quarterback over there at USC, he tried to throw the ball as he was getting sacked, and it was a possible fumble, but the Devils scooped it up and ran it in overtime. And so I'm talking to a friend of mine who I worked with for many years and is an SC grad, and he said, oh, the refs, they just always like to favor the underdog. And I said, you idiot, you arrogant SC, you were the underdog in this game. The Devils, it was late in the season, and they went into that game. It was Jake Plummer and Pat Tillman. They had some really good players in that era. And you were the underdog. But you just assume, because you're SC, everybody else is the underdog.
Yeah. And if it goes the other way, right. And you know, we saw the same thing happen after the game here in Salt Lake, where it was like, I mean, the amount of vitriol. And look, the Pac-12 refs, I mean, you had to see George Kliavkov today say basically they've had some real problems. There have been point-changing decisions that have been real problematic for the league, and anybody with a who's been watching any of these games could at the very least say there have been some issues. But you know, after that game, Lincoln Riley even said, "Hey, we did not get a lot. Some of these calls didn't go our way." And then he comes around this week and says, "No, it's not a revenge game. We don't really think about it. Any team that we'd be playing right now would be special." And I don't believe that for one friggin' second.
Well, you're not supposed to come to Salt Lake City, which is out in the middle of nowhere and all that stuff, and USC is supposed to lose. But they did, and it was a phenomenal game. I was on the field at the end. I've been in many, many Rice Eccles games that were exciting, but nothing was like that. It was by far the best atmosphere. It was incredible. It's what you live for, and the fans were so geeked. I was having people wanting to take pictures with me. They just were randomly taking pictures of people that they thought they might know. And people were so fired up. And it was incredible here. And now you got an opportunity to really solidify yourselves as the program to beat in this conference going forward. Because obviously going forward, SC's leaving. And if you can get this one, then you beat them both times. And I doubt it's going to be a referee's call that's going to be the difference if you were to beat them. You know, you play that game left and right. I tried to tell people, well, when the Utes were in the Rose Bowl, I think it was a Kearney Reed who got a late hit that extended a drive, and that was questionable. So you're just going to have to play through that. How about when you extended the drive on the late hit that you actually got to stop then? And the successive set of downs, you know, you didn't do that, obviously. So plenty of opportunities to win. And yeah, I listened to Klyavkov on that stuff today for sure. And the procedural stuff they've got to get, but the judgment calls are always going to be there. But the procedural stuff is what he was hammering, and Merton Hanks was on there with him, who's a director of football and over the officials, and they need to clean that up for sure. There's no question about that. But this game is just huge in so many different ways. And SC obviously going to the playoff. And Utah, how about you? If you should lose, just really play them tough. And then if you have the other three teams ahead of the Trojans win and in their games, in their conference title games, then they would go in with just one loss among all four, and Utah will have administered that. I think that's something cool. It's, you know, it's maybe not what you're looking for, obviously, because you're trying to win the ball game, and I understand that. But, you know, there's a lot at stake here, I think, just in the immediacy and then going forward and establishing Utah as a legitimate powerhouse in this conference and ready to take over for SC and a lot of other competitors who will be trying and doing the same thing. But if you beat these guys twice in this season, that would be incredible.
You beat Oregon last year twice. You beat USC twice this year. They would be as good of a stretch as anybody has had in this conference. And you talk about what Kyle's accomplished. It's I heard you guys talking this morning a lot about kind of what his future would look like and how that would roll out and what that – I know that he's got a lot of tough decisions to make over the next few seasons. Would winning a Rose Bowl this year, like, expedite that at all? Or he probably would have to already have that in his mind if that were the case.
You know, there's talk about that for sure. I can't deny that, that would be a possibility. I've had people tell me if he got the Rose Bowl, you know, you got the – Sugar Bowl, you would have won the thing. You obviously would go out on an extreme high. And Cam Rising, if they're going to win, Cam Rising is going to play well, right? There's just no way that can happen, that they win if he doesn't play well. The thought being the point that is then he would go on to the NFL and try his fortune there and see what happens. And that does Kyle then want to go through another rebuilding cycle with a quarterback who would be brand new? Mm-hmm. Maybe the quarterback is not even on the roster right now. Sure. You know, I've heard that. And he just turned 63 about 10 days ago. His father passed on the operating table at 64, so it's possible. Yeah, I'm not going to deny that there's been some discussion there, but at the same time, we'll let him make that announcement, and when he's ready, it's there in his mind, but I don't think that it's anything that is on the front of his mind.
Sure.
And it would be then when the season would be over. It would be something that he would be able to – Randy Ray did it at Weber State, you know, kind of caught us off guard a little bit. After the season, you had a chance to regroup, refresh, and then you find out, you know, the velocity and all the energy that you need just isn't there.
Sure.
I can see that, but at the same time, I will be in Vegas tomorrow, and if they should have Whittingham's retirement on the board, I'm not betting it.
It won't be. Yeah, and you know, it's also one of those weird things too, where you go, there's too many things that have to happen for, you know, I don't think he's going to shock anybody with it. I don't think that's really his vibe, but he is. I mean, the way things go now with NIL, he used the word disgusted with it, right? The transfer portal and the NIL stuff. He said, yeah, it's disgusting, frankly, but. Maybe that pushes it also a little bit too far, because that energy can get sucked about the coaching side of things because you're not focusing on the coaching.
Right, and that NIL is an issue with Utah. They're aware of it. They have meetings about it. I've been privy to that stuff, and I've gotten information on that stuff, and they're concerned about it. Kyle has spoken publicly. The fact of the matter is SC – they bought a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And those are the rules, so you got to play by them. But they've got these high-profile kids that came in. I mean, I think they're like, of the 22, one or two of their starters, just below 50%. So, like, what would that be, like 9, 10 transfers. And so they play critical components. Obviously, Williams, the running back, both running backs, Dye is out, but Jones came down from Stanford. Their best linebacker, Gentry, came over from Arizona State, and he got hurt when the Utes played him, but he's back, and so that's the reality of it, man. And Lincoln Riley, you got to give him credit. He didn't break any rules. They played by the rules, and he rebuilt this thing on the fly because this program was a mess last year at 4-8, and here they are at 11-1, and I believe it's going to be a runaway that Caleb Williams is going to win the Heisman. I just don't see any other way around it.
Yeah, but also it's weird, too, because there's this feeling that all these teams, if you are a USC, an Ohio State, a Michigan – a Penn State even, that at some point you go, we're struggling. You know what? Let's just go full Trojans 2022 and just let's get this thing fired back up. And then the expectation from the boosters is the same too. Why don't you just go in there and get a Caleb Williams type right now?
Yeah, and it actually gives the boosters more influence. A lot of these guys, older dudes, middle-aged, 40s, 50s, 60s, and then they get a piece of the program in a sense. This isn't coming without a cost. And okay, I'll give you this, but what do you give me in return? And I've seen it. I've literally seen players that are on this team get a check. Hand it. I'm standing right there when they get the check. I've seen this with my own eyes. That's the reality of the world in which college football is in, and SC is taking advantage of it. And that's, in a sense, that would make this win even sweeter because so many things went Utah's or SC's way with all this stuff. And Lincoln Riley, they paid big money to get, and he comes out there. And Utah keeps just trucking along, doing their thing. And the stability of the program is what has led to the excellence. You look at once David Shaw retired, or didn't retire, but was basically shown the door, Kyle is the lone coach standing. He's the lone remaining coach who was on the job when the Utes went into the Pac-12 in time for the 2011 season, I think it was. And everybody else is gone. And several places, they're gone 3 or 4 or 5 times. And the Utes keep doing what they do. And this would, to me, you can't replace the first time you go to the Rose Bowl. And we were at the Rose Bowl. You were there. And we know how cool it was for everybody. But Oregon, Cristobal, he was out the door, man. It was clear.
So was their OC, right? He was already gone, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was gone, and everybody knew he was gone. The first 5 questions in a press conference a year ago were all about him leaving for Miami, and then by Monday he was introduced. And we saw what happened with Hugh Freeze and Liberty. New Mexico State just beat Liberty because Hugh Freeze was gone. Well, Lincoln Riley isn't gone. So from that perspective, if you go to Las Vegas and beat these guys tomorrow night, in my mind, it's sweeter because there's no yeah buts. SC's got the playoff thing on the line. Sure. They desperately want to win. There's no excuses. If you beat them, their coach isn't out the door, blah, 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 blah. So I think this would be a better victory than it was last year, which was pretty sweet.
You got to get Caleb Williams, get the Heisman Trophy thing figured out early, give him a lay. Put it on a satellite feed, and then that's a guaranteed W for the Utes. You win the Heisman Trophy earlier in the day, you're going to lose the game at night. Right?
I see where you're going. It's the Ty Detmer story.
Ty Detmer version. I think he lost the next 2 games after that, wasn't it? So it was like
the Raiders season end, and then the bowl game.
We got their butts handed to him in those 2. So
Yeah. That was later in the week. I mean, later in the year second week because they'll do it. I think it'll be Saturday night. They'll do the Heisman.
Yep.
This Saturday, but next Saturday.
Yeah, on the 10th, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
PK, what about this whole, before we get you out here and let you do the St. George thing before we get you off to Las Vegas, what's the feeling on the 12-team playoff now? Is it just like, oh, thank heavens, college football is fixed, or is it, hey, great, this has become even more complicated, and we might just see still the blue blood programs, we might be sold a bill of goods that your little team could get into the national championship, but the reality is Greg Sankey's licking his chops to get 5 or 6 teams in.
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any question it's going to be dominated by the Power 5, and I get they want to eliminate that term or eliminate the Group of 5 term, and I'm fine with that, too. It just has a negative connotation to it, like you're second-class type of thing. So, yeah, I think it'll provide teams with an opportunity, and that's great. And maybe you can increase your recruiting, because if you are the best of the lesser conferences, you still got a shot. But I think what we're going to see, and you'll probably need a good maybe 10 years of evidence, that the teams that are playing at the end, with an exception or two, are going to be the 1 through 4, because they'll get the buys. And the 5 through 12, you know, the higher seeds will play probably on campus. And that'll be fun. It'll be great. Maybe it's going to be interesting, too, because it's going to be in December, where a lot of places the weather isn't very good, and that might be something that'll be entertaining. But I'm just wondering that, you know, the other schools, the blue buds, and we know who they are because they're there year after year. They may not get in. Alabama may not get in this year. Ohio State may not get in, didn't get in last year. But they go right down to the wire in the last game. So the dream is alive until right at the end, and then Michigan got the Buckeyes twice this season and last season. But I think you're going to see the emphasis to make sure that they get that bye, and that's going to be a big deal for them. And I think that's going to be a huge advantage for those teams to not have to play that first game on campus. And so what would it be? Would it be the quarterfinals?
Yeah, it'd it'd be quarterfinals. No, the semis would be in that third game. So yeah, you'd have like an eighth of a final, I guess, is what it would be.
Right.
Whatever that would be, yeah.
Right. So if you get that bye, that would be my guess. Now, we need a body of evidence. But, you know, it's about the money, and they were leaving so much money out there. And why not? I think as a fan, I like it. I mean, ultimately, that's all I am
games.
As a fan.
More
games. And you got more games, more excitement, more teams have an opportunity. You know, I don't see how that's so bad. And I know the bowl games, they say, well, we got too many bowl games. And I tell the story of being in Tucson when the Utah State was playing New Mexico State in a bowl game, and it went in overtime, and New Mexico State won. And they're going to go to a bowl game this year, and that was the first time in 50 years or something. And the kids, for them, it was a huge, huge deal. Why not think about that instead of all this other stuff that we think about? They're still young guys, get a chance to play in another game with their buddies. Why is that bad? And who cares? The rest of the world didn't care, but Utah State and New Mexico State cared, and it was fun to be there because they cared about it. No one was opting out, and it was a big deal. I think that's good. That's what it's about here, to have fun and compete.
I do love when somebody goes, "Oh man, why are we watching this game?" And you go, "You tell me. It's been on the TV for 3 hours. We've been watching the New Mexico Bowl." You
know, yeah, and I got it. It's nothing. But for the kids that are there and their teammates and so forth,
right,
it's fun. And I was on the sidelines there and looking at the kids in New Mexico State celebrate the way they did. It was fun for those guys. And it would have been fun for Utah State if they had won, but they lost in OT.
Just do the I'm fine with extra bowls. Make it that you have to have a winning record. Like, I don't – the 5-7 teams and the 5-6 teams, because New Mexico State's going to get in again this year with a waiver because they didn't play that last game. So,
right.
But at 5-6, I don't know. I mean, maybe because the coaches get extra practice, that's also another bonus.
Yeah, I guess. But 6-5, they're all of a sudden a great team?
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, BYU this year, people are going, "I'm over it." You know, like 7-5. It's like wasn't good enough in their heads. PK, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for hanging out with me today.
Okay.
And
yeah,
have fun down there in Vegas, and we'll be reading your stuff and watching you down there.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, PK. All right, bye. There you go. Patrick Kinahan.
NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
Louisville!
And the other guy on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Well, the NFL quarterback is on his way down to Las Vegas. Scott is, of course, calling this thing on the radio. Tomorrow, the Utah Utes and the USC Trojans facing off in Las Vegas. I love Allegiant Stadium. I'm glad they do it there. It's actually awesome. If you haven't been down there to catch a game yet, maybe you didn't go to the Pac-12 championship game, I've been down to a couple games down there now, and the atmosphere is as good as it gets. The stadium is perfectly set up. You can just park across at like the Luxor or Mandalay Bay right there, even like Excalibur, and walk a half a mile, and you don't have to worry about the whole trying to get an Uber over to the stadium or any of that, or paying $100 to park. It's an awesome setup. And what's interesting is if for Utah, If you win this game tomorrow, this is your friggin' stadium. Like, you win the Pac-12 championship 2 years in a row here, and the way that the fans showed up so giant at last year's game, and this game sold out, by the way, they announced that the whole thing sold out, not just Utah's allotment was sold out yesterday, and the rest of this thing. Now, you can get the secondary tickets. Ooh, that just piqued my interest here, Jeremy. Let me see this here. So if I wanted to get some tickets to the Utah-USC game, find me the cheapest one. That's your homework right here. Find the cheapest one. I'm going to see if I can beat you on the cheapest ticket, because I have a friend who is going down and decided to buy the tickets today. Great time to buy the tickets. They're the upper nosebleed version. Although the stadium it's an NFL stadium, so it's not the killer ones that are hard to, you can't see or anything. But these are the very top of the stadium. And I think they were $270 a piece, $300 a piece. Those are what he paid for his today. Okay, so what do you have?
Section 317, row 8. Pretty high up. Not
yeah,
the highest.
It's not the highest.
$61 each.
Oh, my heavens. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, he got ripped off. Now, are those like the end zones, or what are we looking at
here? Kind of corner.
Yeah. So he got like 50-yard line on those top upper kind of seats right there for $250, something like that. So, I don't know. You can get Pac-12 championship tickets. They're just going to be second. They're going to be that secondary market. That just shows you how freaking big of a ripoff the Notre Dame game was, dude, right?
$75, upper,
okay.
50-yard line.
There you
section,
go. So. Yeah, he got ripped off, man, I'll tell you.
About 150, 75 to 150.
Now, how about this, though? Because this game is interesting, because if you go to this one, and I would tell you, I've sat, I've actually, when you go up into the media part, it's kind of like, you're not actually very close at all. They've done that more and more, where it's like, hey, these stadiums, we can get so much more money if we just put the media guys up here in a corner.
Jerry World, that's what they done the tour. They
yes.
stick you like in the
yes,
corner
it's
end zone.
Jammed over there.
Jerry's like, I want sightline right on
right.
the TV and the field.
Exactly. Get the media out of here. If you want to sit 50-yard line down in section 109 or section 112, you're paying $550. That's what I'm seeing. But, yeah, there's $60 tickets out there. Hey, I told you, if you're going to leave, though, you got to leave right now. So don't try to buy the $61 ticket tomorrow. Just figure it out. But you can get yourself they got some club tickets that are for sale. How much are these? How much are we talking here?
About five.
Oh!
500. I saw a couple.
And a suite ticket. $800 a piece.
Food included.
Let's go. Food included. Let's go.
I did check flights. Yeah.
And?
About 500.
My heavens. There are flights going down?
There are some, yes.
I'm shocked. Okay. There you go. There's your update. Tickets are available, but from people who already bought the tickets for a much cheaper price. You're going to get scalped, but it's not by much. All right, NFL roundup goes like this today. I'm glad we did that. I'm glad we looked that up. Actually, you know what? It's a Pac-12 championship game. $60 tickets, not bad. For USC and Utah, that's pretty darn good.
Could be the best championship game this weekend.
Best championship game for your value. That's what it was voted on by AAA.
And the game.
Best for your value.
Possibly the game as well.
How dare you? Maybe the game, yes.
K-State TCU up there.
Two purple teams in the Big 12? No thanks. That's what people are saying. That's a TCU and K-State? What's hilarious about this is that you had teams like Kansas State and Iowa State and Kansas that BYU was looking at going, well, we can get those guys. We can beat those guys. Nope, not anymore. Everybody got good this year.
3-9. That's what you're looking at.
3-9. That's your over under on next year's BYU results.
Without knowing the schedule, yes.
There's four out of conference games, though, aren't there?
Yeah.
Three? Four.
Three,
yeah,
there's four. Three or four. Depends. We don't know the
we
nine,
don't know yet.
Nine
okay.
or eight.
I think it's going to be eight.
Sam Houston State, they got them, right?
Going to get those guys. And I think they're playing Southern Utah as well.
Two.
So those are two. You think they're only going to win one in all of Big 12 play?
If they play West Virginia, that'd be helpful.
Oh, my goodness. No, because you know what they'll do? They'll do the totally BYU thing and beat Oklahoma or beat Texas.
Exactly.
That's their thing. All right. So, first up on the old NFL roundup here. Matt Rhule says he regrets taking the Panthers job. Well, that's what you regret taking a job after you get fired from it. I mean, that's what happened to Matt Rhule. And I don't think, these college coaches, when are they going to learn? The level of ego that you say, you know what? Some of the best coaches in college football history have tried to go up to this next level and it doesn't work. Yeah, but they weren't like me, though. I'm going to give it a shot. And Matt Rhule walked away from that situation at the Panthers, and he made quite a bit of coin on the situation, made tons of money. And yeah, it's wild to think that he didn't last that long. Nick Saban didn't last long. The only person that we've seen really do this and it's worked is Pete Carroll, right? Isn't that the one who we've seen the most success out of? College coach to an NFL coach?
I would think so, yeah.
Pete Carroll.
By far. Well, Jimmy Johnson.
But what's interesting about Jimmy Johnson was he did it for like 5 seconds. You know, it was like show up from Miami. And I was a kid living in the Dallas area when this happened. And then they go 1-15 that first year. They make the Herschel Walker trade. They end up just killing it in the draft. They get Emmitt Smith. They get all these. They had already gotten the year that 1-15 year. I think was Troy Aikman's rookie season.
So what you're saying, Jerry Jones won the Super Bowls. That's why he's still a GM.
I'm trying to get a job with the Cowboys later, so I'll have it on record. So I say, Jerry, it was you who won those Super Bowls. Remember?
Just be his glasses cleaner. Come on, like a son-in-law.
Dude, I mean, Barry Switzer showed up for 5 seconds. You could say Barry Switzer also. He showed up for 5 seconds and went, "Give me a Super Bowl, okay." But Matt Rhule is going to Nebraska. How long till they get that thing figured out? And what's funny is there's kind of a sexy draw for these schools and for recruits to be like, man, this guy was an NFL coach. He was in the NFL. He knows what it takes to get to the NFL. He's got some connections. And these players, they're like, that's Matt Rhule. He was coaching the Carolina Panthers. So Rhule says he wouldn't have taken the job had he known what he knows now. What does he know now?
It's hard. NFL is really good.
Of course it's good.
You can't get all the players you want. You have to free agency draft. You can't get the 10 best guys in the state to take over.
Yeah, but you get a lot of really freaking good talent. Now, his problem was, like so many other teams out there who are garbage, what's the common denominator? Most of them don't have a quarterback.
And Christian McCaffrey gets hurt.
And then Christian McCaffrey gets traded and everything, and then the Panthers explode. So he says, I think I probably would have taken another job. A great place with wonderful people, but I just don't know if I was a fit there. Let me tell you how you can tell. This is a little science experiment for you if you were a fit there or not. Are you there currently? The answer is no. So he was not a good fit. The organization didn't like you. At some point, the players probably go, this dude's living in the college world. These guys cannot help but try to have the same success at the pro level the way that they had success in college, and it doesn't work at the pro level. I don't know which guy thinks that they're going to do it and have that kind of success, because I even think Pete Carroll had to play the game, had to be the NFL, had to play that NFL game to be able to make it work. And that was his second time around, by the way, because he stunk when he was with the Patriots for 5 seconds. So Matt Rhule, I wish him the best. I want teams like Nebraska to do well. I think Nebraska is one of the blue blood teams. Nebraska needs to be back to great. And it stinks to watch a team like that suffer, because that whole state likes one thing. It's Nebraska football. Everything else is just side dishes, including the corn. Side dish, okay? Aaron Donald is going to miss a game doing an injury for the first time in his career. That's wild to think that this guy is, one, undersized for his position, two, has had all-pro performances in his career, is a Super Bowl winner, is a Defensive Player of the Year guy for, you know, this Rams team, and he's now, for the first time in his career, going to be injured and miss a game. That type of longevity didn't happen very often, but injury bug will run you down. Doesn't matter. It will run you down. Deshaun Watson, we talked about it yesterday and how he said he wasn't going to have any media availability. Well, I don't think the league took too kindly to that. They probably said, hey, listen, that's not what we do, even for you. We've made a lot of exceptions for some people, but you're not going to be the one that we do, because we're not going to look like we are giving you any kind of special treatment on this thing. So you got to talk to reporters. First comments to the reporters: I've been advised not to talk about any of this. Any non-football related questions, I will have those directed to my legal team. Boo! None of the fun questions. None of the ones that we have to actually watch you dance around with.
Can we get a real apology one time from him, maybe?
No.
Like a sincere?
That would be an admission of guilt.
There you go. Lawyer says no.
So would the – and then like, oh, the settling with 28 people is not an admission of guilt. Yeah. Whatever.
Can I just get a non-awkward response besides
just
this?
Talk normal, dude.
Exactly.
Like, you need to roll up and go, I wish that I could get it all back, and I wish I didn't have to – I wish I wasn't doing this. I wish I would have behaved better. Rondo of Cleveland.
I mean Houston.
No, he specifically is on it. I'm on to Cleveland, and then I'll be playing in Houston. First game back at the Texans. What is that stadium going to sound like? You tell me. You're a Houstonite.
It's going to be booing
forever. Boo birds? Boo birds? Mm-hmm. Boo. It's going to be like as big a birds as you can find. Boo birds.
There'll be more than boos.
Do you think they're going to be throwing? Do you think garbage is thrown? Over under on how much time is they're going to have to stop the game to pick up the garbage that's been thrown?
Well, that's a good one.
Mm. I've seen it happen at games. They have to stop, take the thing around, pick up all the garbage.
I'll say this. He'll get a touchdown, I'm betting.
Ooh.
When he's in the end zone, that's when it starts coming. Because he'll probably run it in. That's what he does. And then they'll start throwing beer cups and popcorn and corn dogs,
stuff.
Nachos, whatever they have.
A corn dog. Corn dog goes straight into the face mask. Boom. That's my dream moment from this weekend. Give me a corn dog to the orbital of of Deshaun Watson, then I'll make my weekend. All right. we'll take a break here. Hey, does your home need a new look? The folks at RGS Exteriors can give you that look. Give them a call right now. Whether it's stucco, brick, vinyl, James Hardy Siding, they want to take care of you. Tim Brown and his team are going to take care of you. 801-280-3110. That's 801-280-3110. RGS Exteriors. More to go around the corner when we return. 2-minute drill. Up next. Stay with us.
Once again.
Championship day.
Kyle Whittingham.
You know what time it is?
Your home for the best football coverage in Utah
is on the KSL Sports Zone. Utah, USC. It's the Pac-12 championship game as the Utes look to punch their ticket to another Rose Bowl. Your home for the best coverage of Utah football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hut,
hut, hut. This is Unrivaled, presented by G2G Bar on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back to the show. Scott Mitchell's out on assignment, of course. Boy, okay, so PK's on the road. Hanson Lloyd. They're on the road. Sam and JJ from TV. They're on the road. And here you and I are, Jeremy. Scott's on the road, and here we are.
Hey, we're here working hard.
Yeah, listen, I'll actually be honest. It's funner to do a show for 3 or 4 hours than it is to drive 3 or 4 hours, get out, stretch, and then get back in the car for another 2. This is funner.
Yeah,
that's what I'm telling myself. Because I'll tell you what's really fun about those trips. Making Nate pay for dinner. That's it. So that's what we do. This one's on Nate, everybody. Here we go. Extra sushi. 2-minute drill. You heard the music. You heard the man. All brought to you by the folks at Jerry Seiner Cadillac. Jerry Seiner Cadillac. You can shop and get your way to a piece of luxury that you deserve. Stop and test drive a Jerry Seiner Cadillac today. Beautiful cars. The Lakers locker room leaders believe the team is just a few players away from becoming a legitimate contender. Who said that? Who in the locker room said that? And by the way, every locker room in the entire freaking league could go, we're just 4 or 5 players short, man. And we are good. We're just a few players away from becoming a legitimate contender? That's literally every team in every sport.
Yeah, Giannis and Durant, sure. Why not?
How about just like in football? USC was Caleb Williams away from going 11-1. Maybe throwing in Jordan Addison and a couple others. But even then, a few players. What I love about this is just the disillusion that happens in L.A. Oh, man, we are so close. Well, how close do you think we are? I mean, four or five players. The thing is in college now, you can reset everything. There's no such thing as a rebuild now. And in the pros, there should be real no... I mean, we don't expect rebuilds to last that long anymore. We don't want the 2 or 3 year rebuild. Doesn't happen. There you go. Ivy League football stars, all-stars, are going to be playing in a Dream Bowl versus a team of Japanese all-star football players. Is this real? This sounds like something like off of... I saw this article today, and I thought, it feels like, remember that show you used to watch, The American Gladiators? Remember when you watch that show, and you're like, these aren't real sports? These are like athletes, I can tell, but they're shooting tennis balls at each other. If the Ivy League All-Stars go over and play in a game against Japanese football All-Stars, which you didn't know existed till today, neither did I.
Hey, I know there's Japanese football. Come on. The X-League? Who doesn't know that?
It's called the X-League?
It is, yeah.
We have the XFL. They have the X League,
which I found out today as well. So,
okay, so today you found out. All right, there you go. The Dream Bowl. Hmm. Good for them. I keep telling my kid, I go, look, send your tape. You're going to be a serviceable football player, but you're a good student. Send the tape to Columbia. They're usually 1-9 in Ivy League play. Go to an Ivy League school. You don't get a scholarship, but what you can get is in. If you're on that football team. All right, the Rose Bowl. I saw this today, too. According to reports, the Rose Bowl might be more prone to pick Penn State than they would over Ohio State. For the sake of, Ohio State's been playing here recently. That's the idea. I would still want Ohio State. That's the bigger brand. Now, what you get from Penn State is players who actually want to be there. That's the difference. I think it's not about Ohio State, whether or not Ohio State really wants to do it. It's not about whether or not Ohio State would be the better brand, because obviously Ohio State is the bigger brand out of those two. But I think that Ohio State would not be as interested in playing. They weren't interested last year. So a second one in a row might be not as interested either. Penn State might be all over it. They might love it. And that's, obviously it's a big enough brand. So there you go. There's your two-minute drill. Our show is always brought to you by G2G Bars. Love their support. Love that protein bar. If you've not had a G2G Bar... all natural ingredients, plenty of protein. If you're doing the meal replacement thing, this thing works perfect. Keeps you full for a long time. G2GBar.com, Costco Associated Foods, and also Maverick and Holiday Oil, all in the refrigerated section because they're preservative free.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Attention. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The Cheez-It Suite. That hotel room decked out in all Cheez-It stuff that the Cheez-It Bowl's doing. It's brilliant. It's like the Quiznos.
We love the sub.
It's so bad, it's good. Remember those guys? And I remember the agency, they like fired those guys. It was like a small shop. They fired those guys and then realized, they were stop motion puppet animation of rats that had been, or like gerbils that had been, what is that when they stuff them? They stuffed them. They were like fake. They were real. It was like this. It was horrible and amazing all at the same time. It brought all the attention. The Cheez-It Room. I'm telling you, anniversary in, you got to cash in on this thing. The Cheez-It Room could be a type of romance that people aren't used to. Intermountain Primary Children's Hospital is building the nation's model health system for children to serve more kids in more communities more comprehensively. We love our partnership with the folks at Primary Children's Hospital. Intermountain Primary Children's Hospital, better than ever before. Get involved at visit primarypromise.org. Primarypromise.org is the website. Okay. Tiger Woods, it looks like, our final segment of the show as we roll this thing out. Tiger Woods looks like he's basically shutting it down for only the biggest events ever, which is fine. You know why? Tiger Woods says he plans to pare down his competitive golf, and we'll see him play in the majors and then maybe two or three other events that really mean a lot to him. To which I say, those are the only ones we watch you in anyway. And really, if it came down to it from a mainstream standpoint, the one everybody is dipping in to see if he'll win it is the Masters. As long as Tiger Woods is playing the Masters, which that invitation is always open until the end of his days, as long as he's been the multiple green jacket winner, which he is, he can go and play in that thing anytime he wants, and we will watch it every year. So Tiger Woods, if you're not going to play in the Waste Management Open, in the Cheez-It Hotel Room Open, then I'm fine with it because I just want to see you playing the majors anyway. All right, Jeremy, thanks for hitting the buttons today, buddy. We'll come back again tomorrow. Jake Hatch and I are going to do a shortened version of the show tomorrow as we walk you up to coverage of the University of Utah and our Ute pregame show coverage that starts at 5 o'clock tomorrow, and then our Jazz pregame show that starts right after. So many things going on tomorrow, so Jake Hatch is going to join me 3 to 5. So we'll talk to you then. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.